All political parties in Saskatchewan reject Trudeau's gun control agenda. Then Alexa Lavoie joins the show to talk about the campus pogrom at McGill University. I'm Sheila Gunn-Reid, and you're watching The Ezra Levant Show.
Shame on you, you censorious thug.
Trudeau's gun grab is falling apart, and the Saskatchewan NDP are helping that to happen. Now, like so many of you, I'm shocked, but I couldn't be happier to see this latest Trudeau failure. Yes, the happy news is out of Saskatchewan, where so many good conservative ideas are tested first before being adopted in big, showy, fancy ways here in Alberta. For example, Saskatchewan had an associate minister of provincial autonomy, dedicated to fighting with the federal government, opposing federal overreach into provincial jurisdiction, while at the same time, former Alberta Premier Jason Kenney was busy writing strongly worded letters to Justin Trudeau that we now know Trudeau never read because Trudeau doesn't read anything, not even high-level security briefings.
The only sure way to make me aware of a priority issue is not simply to give me a note, which I may or may not read or may not have time to read if I am traveling or if I'm particularly busy at that point. It is the best way to convey information to me is to receive a direct briefing from my national security advisor, an intelligence advisor, who would give me security updates, usually on several topics, during the same session. And this would happen on a regular basis. Sometimes it's once or twice a week, or even more often if necessary. Sometimes it's only three or four times a month. It all depends. But the only way to guarantee, to make sure that I receive the necessary information is to give me an in-person briefing or over a secure line, if necessary, on any issue or priority issue.
And Saskatchewan introduced its Saskatchewan First Act on November 1st, 2022. That was about a month before Alberta introduced our own version of similar anti-federal overreach legislation. We called ours the Sovereignty Act. Saskatchewan has also led the charge on parents' rights, introducing legislation in September of 2023. And they even went so far as to invoke the constitutional nuclear button of the notwithstanding clause to go around activists' court challenges to the law.
The notwithstanding clause is not utilized often in this province, utilized much more often in a province like Quebec. And listen, maybe just a comment with respect to the notwithstanding clause. It was part of those very charter discussions advocated on by the premiers at the time of Saskatchewan and Alberta, because there was, as those rights that were included under the charter were being discussed, there was other rights that were identified as well that were not included under the charter. And it was also identified that at some point in the future, there could be the collision of these charter protected rights and other rights that are important to Saskatchewan residents and to Canadian residents as well. And when those rights collide, the notwithstanding clause was provided to ensure that the elected government of the day would be able to make the decision on as to which of those rights would be in effect for the people that they ultimately represent. And in this case, that's the rights of a parent to ensure they're involved in their children's decision, bring our parents closer to our children's classrooms, schools, and ultimately make for a more reactionary and more responsive education system in the province.
A similar version of that parental rights policy was adopted in Alberta only a few short months ago, in February 2024.
Well, we know that we have to preserve the rights of kids to be able to make decisions as adults. I think that we've seen in other jurisdictions, I believe in June of last year, New Brunswick made policy changes in the fall. Saskatchewan made policy changes. We've been watching internationally as the UK has made policy changes, as well as Denmark, Norway, Finland, Sweden. I mean, this has been an ongoing conversation over the last number of years. We've been monitoring it very closely, and we wanted to make sure that we struck the right balance so that kids are not making irreversible decisions when they may not be mature enough to make those decisions. We want to make sure that those adult decisions are made as adults.
Now, back in 2020, in direct response to Justin Trudeau's unscientific gun grab of 1,500 models of Canadian shotguns and rifles, including the AR-15 through an order in council, Alberta and Saskatchewan nearly simultaneously announced that they were kicking out Justin Trudeau's federal chief firearms officers in their respective provinces and then appointing their own. Then, both provinces said they would not direct RCMP resources to confiscate the now banned firearms from otherwise law-abiding people, while Trudeau's bail policies, soft-on-crime nonsense, and permissive drug laws caused societal breakdown and decay, and of course, a spike in violent crime across our communities.
Well, I call that a success that they haven't been able to seize a single law-abiding firearms owner's gun. So I wish them continued success at being able to achieve zero compliance with their program. And we are not going to do anything to help them. We believe that the issue is the illegal firearms getting into the hands of gangs and organized crime coming across the border. And the federal government should be focused on that, not focusing on taking guns away from sport shooters, duck hunters, and farmers.
But Saskatchewan went one step further and actually put that announcement into law with the Saskatchewan Firearms Act. The law established a licensing requirement for businesses and individuals involved in what the government called firearms expropriation. What they mean here is helping Justin Trudeau take firearms from law-abiding Canadians. In Saskatchewan, if you want to participate in the federal buyback program, which is a misnomer because you cannot buy back something that you didn't own in the first place. Anyway, if you want to participate in snatching the lawfully acquired property from your fellow Saskatchewan resident, you cannot receive money from the federal government to do it. You just, I guess, have to be ideologically aligned with the federal government to do it. So, all good stuff out of Saskatchewan. You guys don't get enough credit for being keepers of the freedom flame. However, and this is weird for me, it's not just conservatives in Saskatchewan fighting Trudeau's gun grab. It's everyone, including the NDP. Again, unsettling for me, but credit where it's due. Look at this tweet from Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe. Last week in the legislature, a motion was passed unanimously calling on the federal government to devolve all parts of the Firearms Act to the province of Saskatchewan in order to allow the province to administer and regulate legal firearms possession. Our government remains committed to protecting the rights of law-abiding firearms owners and will continue to stand up against Bill C-21, that's the gun grab, while supporting initiatives aimed at the illegal use of firearms in our province. With a rare unanimous yes vote in the Saskatchewan legislature, a private member's motion on guns passed Thursday. The motion from Carrot River Valley MLA Fred Bradshaw calls on the federal government to devolve or pass on responsibility for all parts of the Firearms Act to the province so it can administer and regulate gun possession itself. So thank you, Saskatchewan, for being a pragmatic prairie petri dish that grows common sense policies, especially on gun issues. Our cultures out here in the West are vastly different from that of downtown Toronto, and so our laws should reflect that. So all that is to say, I see you have yet another good idea we here in Alberta would like to adopt. Alexa Lavoie joins the show after the break to discuss the anti-Semitic sit-in at McGill University in Montreal. Stay tuned. Justin Trudeau's soft-on-crime policies are not the only thing that have caused the erosion of civil society here in Canada. It's also his soft on anti-Semitism policies. Right now, in university campuses across North America, what I would call campus pogroms have popped up, making it nearly impossible for Jewish students to feel safe as anti-Semitic sit-ins, occupations are occurring. Now, we know that there have been these occupations at Columbia in the United States, at the Fashion Institute of Technology as well. But as with most bad leftist ideas, it's spilled into Canada. We've got one at McGill. One is threatened to occur at Ottawa today. So joining me is my friend and one of the hardest working journalists in the country, Alexa Lavoie. She was out over the weekend at McGill. I wanted to bring her on to have her report to us exactly what she saw, because you just cannot trust the Trudeau-compromised mainstream media to tell you exactly what is occurring there. And I know Alexa goes into these things with the eyeballs of a normal person. She will notice things that the CBC won't. Alexa, you worked all weekend. Now you're the guest on the Ezra Levant show today. I know you're very busy editing stuff in the background too. I wanted to have you on the show, though, because I think this is one of the most important stories in the country today, that we have now rolled back the clock 70 or so years so that it is nearly impossible for Jewish students to attend university in some universities across North America. Tell me, what piqued your interest? Why did you go to McGill over the weekend?
So you need to see that there is a multiple side of the story. So when you are on the ground, first of all, mainstream media are welcome. And I was not really surprised. They were really nice with them. They were giving interview with them. And they were showing one side of the story to the mainstream media. But what I really saw on the ground was, first of all, camp, supplies, and also like people asking for everyone to continue to supply them with food or other furniture, everything for creating more of this outrageous like board that they have, like anti-Semite sign. They have also a toilet in the tent, and they have, so they are pretty well organized, I would say. But when you arrive there, there is also a really fun side of the story. So if you want to speak with someone, everything is really controlled. So you cannot speak with the people on the ground. There is specific people mandated to speak with media. So your freedom of expression, we don't really care about it. So shut up and not talk to media because you're not allowed to. So just wear your mask for not being recognized and stay into the encampment. Police are not really coming into the premises because it's a private property of McGill. McGill have issued a statement to their citizens, to their students, saying that they are looking into removing the tents. They are speaking with lawyers right now because since the beginning that started in Saturday, the number of tents have apparently tripled. So they are not really happy of all of this, and we will see in the next few days if McGill will really do what they are saying, removing the tent. I met some Jewish students that say to me that since October 7th, they don't feel safe on the campus. They've been followed, they've been harassed, they've been threatened. One of them actually sent me a video. And we see him and other people are just surrounding him and say, chanting, go back to Europe. And he just replied, but my family is from Iraq. Like, I'm not even from Europe. And everybody was just screaming at him. But like, imagine being a Jewish student arriving on their campus where they go to school and being surrounded by people who are fully masked, chanting some anti-Semite slogan. And by the way, like saying like, when our people is occupied, resistance is justified. This is actually saying that October 7th was justified. So I tried to engage conversation with some of them, but I would say that I was surrounded by Antifa right away when I arrived. So I was just filming like some tent and some sign of anarchist communism. There were flag of communists flying around. Of course, no flag of Canada. There were no flag of it. No flag of Quebec. It was either communism or Palestine. And so they came to me. They stopped me to record on either the march, because they had the march, and they were also the encampment. But what I can actually say, the people who took over the park in the university, they are rich, wealthy, white students who most of them doesn't know nothing about the conflicts. If you ask them like just basic question of, oh, what the river and what the sea mean, like which, what, can you tell me the name of the river or the sea? They don't, they cannot say to me what it is. And, and I saw also there is other people, different kind of people who were marching in the street, like mostly much more anti-Israel, but not as Antifa or like anti-capitalist or anti-everything. I would say like anti-police, anti-everything. So I would say on the campus, the tension was way more palpable.
So I want to ask you, are the tents, they look new, right? Like these are not outdoorsy people.
I would say I'm going to open like a tent shop because probably they will have like more encampment growing in Canada. I can make like a lot of money because like most of the tents, oh, by the way, some of them like had a hard time to bring it up because they were still like putting it up. But like you see, Ottawa University, they're supposed to go there afterwards. We'll see because the Ottawa University have issued a statement that they refuse that. I just feel sorry and not sorry in the same time for all those universities that now they are like trying to organize everything. But in the same time, when you look at it, teachers are taking part of this movement.
And I think that's why they're wearing masks, is I think some of them are members of the faculty and they don't want people to know. Could you imagine just being an apolitical student, not even a Jewish student, but just somebody who wants to go to university and escape unbrainwashed, and your teachers are participating in the anti-Semitic sit-in movement?
Yeah, and I try to engage conversation and just ask them, do you condemn October 7 massacre, or do Hamas is a terrorist organization? Can you actually say it? They cannot say it. They always have a reason why they will not say it. And one of the men actually said to me, I will not condemn the October 7 massacre, but I understand it. But I was like, there is nothing to understand.
Right. It's like how Justin Trudeau understood why people were burning down churches. And, you know, they really don't even understand the issue here. Because when they say that, you know, their resistance is justified because of an occupation, there's no occupation in Gaza. There's not a Jew in Gaza. They even dug up the bodies when Israel pulled out of the Gaza Strip. So they don't even understand what the issue is here. What are their demands? Why are they even there?
I would say every demand that they are asking doesn't make sense. Look at, they are asking for a ceasefire, but in the same time saying that we need to normalize and do intifada a little bit everywhere. And intifada is actually, they keep saying that it's uprising. It's not. For the beginning of the history, Intifada have caused multiple deaths in Israel, and it was not what you think. It was just, not just like with like some like rock and just like throwing rocks like at people. It was violent, and it doesn't go in the same side that, oh, we are claiming for a ceasefire. They don't want a ceasefire.
No, there was a ceasefire on October 6th. There was a ceasefire.
So every ceasefire have been broke by Palestine. And the thing is, most of them, probably some of them have good faith, I would say, and they were, have been brainwashed. And they really believe that they are doing a good cause. I'm sorry for them because there is a lot of manipulation on this movement. Some of them, like they think that, yes, they will achieve something, but in the same time, it's clear Palestine doesn't want to have a state with with the partition line. So at the end of the day, their demand is actually the destruction of Israel, but they don't want to say it out loud because it's anti-Semite. But they do, but they don't do. They do, they do it, but in another way that they can actually confuse people and say, no, that the meaning is not really what you think. It's something else. But in the same time, their meaning, it's all through their slogan. But it's easier to manipulate people by saying that it means something else and confuse them. So right now, the students say that they want the universities to sever ties with Israel. But in the same time, that would never happen. So all along, those people would be allowed to camp everywhere across Canada on campus and stopping Jewish students or just normal people to go to assist their courses, because most of teachers have canceled some of their courses just because of that, because some of them but first of all, there is some people who are not going into their course. And we will see, because in the McGill statement, they say that most of the people in those campaigns, they are not students at McGill. So right now, there is an issue of, we are for freedom of speech, freedom of protest, but those people are not from our university. So we are not supporting people who are not our client, because it's kind of like being a client when you go to the school. But so we will see what will happen. But I know that right now they are looking to remove them from there. But it would be hard. I think police would need to intervene at one point, because they will not let anybody to go and pull down the tent, especially because they've really put real fence, metal fence around it. But I will say that I visited their Telegram chat, and they are asking for money, a donation, everything that they need as supplies. And they are also asking people to come at night for security to protect the camp. So I don't think a lot of people are sleeping in the camp. I think there is some people who rely themselves to keep the camp up, because on the first night, there were a big storm that happened in Montreal. So I was just thinking, oh my God, they're probably not happy like right now.
Alexa, I know that you are going to keep a very careful eye on this story. I think you were the first independent journalist on the scene there, and I know you'll probably be there, and I know you'll probably be the last. I just appreciate your willingness to just get out there in the field and bring the people the news, because they can trust us and they can't trust the mainstream media, who are only talking to the controlled media relations people of these protests. Because we know if you talk to an actual protester, they might tell you exactly what they think, and it probably wouldn't be pretty. And, you know, as always, if these people are Canadian citizens, well, okay. But if they are foreign national supporters of Hamas, people can go to our petition site at deporthamas.com and sign that petition calling on the governments to evict these terror apologists from our country. Letters, letters, letters. We get your viewer feedback all day, every single day. Why? Because we actually care about what you think about the work that we do here at Rebel News. We love to hear from you. We want to know what our stories make you feel, what our stories make you think, and if we are truly giving you, as our company mandate says, the other side of the story, something you could not find in the mainstream media. Now, today's letters come to us on Ezra's interactions with protesters at the New York Fashion Institute. And those were the aforementioned anti-Semitic protesters. I believe Ezra calls them Mein Kampf. They are there to demand the divestment of the university from any ties to the state of Israel, because they have sided with Hamas on the October 7th terror attack. I guess they feel that those 1,200 innocent Israeli civilians had it coming, along with the 240 plus hostages, the babies that were kidnapped. They obviously deserved it, according to these people. Now, Joyce, I'm sorry, I'm probably saying that wrong, says, ironic that protesters are protesting the occupation of Gaza, but are occupying private property. That indeed they are. But as I pointed out in my discussion with my friend Alexa Lavoie, there is no occupation of Gaza. The Israelis pulled out of Gaza a decade ago. They even dug up the bodies of the dead from the cemeteries. Gazans have been in control of Gaza, and they have decided to focus all their attention and aid dollars on terrorism rather than building their economy and giving the people of Gaza a better life. So they are not even protesting a thing that is really happening, even remotely. Roberto Sifredi says, universities cannot discriminate and single out a country for divestment. It's against both federal and state statutes. I'm not all that sure about United States statutes. However, singling out the state of Israel for divestment while the state of Israel is fighting an existential battle for survival feels slightly anti-Semitic, and targeting Jewish students who may or may not be citizens of the state of Israel feels completely anti-Semitic. Making Jewish students uncomfortable to go to their own university, that's anti-Semitism, and it has rolled the clock back to, you know, 1939 Berlin. It's morphed, says, it's Gaza Floyd. You know, it's more than that. It's Occupy 2.0. For those of you who have been around the political block as long as I have, and I hate to say that, but this is exactly like Occupy Wall Street. It's an astroturfed, union-funded, if I had to guess, protest where the people involved in the protest are exactly what Ezra describes them as, useful idiots. They're not even sure why they're there. Just somebody told them that they should be there, and they are social justice advocates. And so this is how they fight for social justice without actually knowing what justice really is. And if I had to guess, most of these people are not there in the evening. They leave their brand new tent that probably still has the price tags on it and their sleeping bag that's never been washed, and they go back to their comfortable first world lifestyle. This is the lowest form of social justice, sitting in a park all day in new camping equipment without even having to camp. It's lame. And, you know, there's a reason it popped up in the spring and not in the winter, when much of the fighting in Gaza was already taking place. Well, everybody, that's the show for tonight. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm not sure who's hosting the show tomorrow. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's David Menzies. I don't think it is Ezra Levant, but thanks to everybody who works behind the scenes to put the show together so that it's there for you whenever you want to watch it, because, you know, this is the internet. Things are convenient. And as Ezra Levant always says, keep fighting for freedom.